Hi there, this is Mike Tufaga, and I'm here with Dr. Quan Du, and we're going to be talking about adrenals today. So Dr. Du, say you have a patient that comes into clinic with an incidental finding of an adrenal mass. How do you approach those types of patients?
Okay, so this is the way I would think about it. First of all, adrenal tumors are quite common, and incidental adrenal tumors occurs in about 4% of the patients. So if you do enough CT scan, you're going to find many of these. About 1% at age 30, about 7% in age 70. So, you know, and then one needs to have a standard way of approaching an adrenal tumor, because knowing that how common it is, you should know that most of the tumors that you find as incidentalomas are more than likely not going to hurt your patient and don't need an operation. So the way I think about it is, when I see an incidentaloma, I ask myself, is this a cancer? And I'm sure the patient is wondering about the same thing. And the second question is that, even if this is not a cancer, is this thing producing hormone that's bad for my patients? So those are the only two questions that I need to ask and answer. Because if it's not a cancer, and it's not making any hormone that's hurting my patients, and it's incidentally discovered, we should just leave it alone, or we can follow it along. So you start playing endocrinologist. You say, well, what are the hormone-secreting tumors that I can root out by what tests? So there are usually three types of tumors we look for in incidentalomas. One is a pheochromocytoma. One is cortisol-secreting tumors that cause Cushing's, and then the last one is aldosteronoma. Now, you may say, oh yeah, I know about all of those things. You know, they have all these pictures of people's Cushing's, or I know pheochromocytoma, you know, people have sweating, palpitation, and etc. As it turns out, many of these hormone-secreting tumors present in a subclinical way. And so an example would be pheochromocytoma that we see currently. More than half present as incidentalomas. So they don't always have the symptoms that you think that should be there. Cushing's patients don't all have moon faces and purple striae and central obesity and all that. They may advance disease, but many of the incidentaloma that's associated with these lesions can be, many of them are subclinical. So you need to know the biochemical workup for these diseases. So for pheo, the best test is plasma free metanephrine and normetanephrine, which is very, very sensitive. Now you have to do it right, and usually early in the morning and all that, but it's a good screening test. And then another test is 24-hour urine fractionated metanephrine or metanephrine. So that's also a very good test. And if that test is negative, you don't have a pheo, and you're okay. For Cushing's, the best screening test is probably dexamethasone suppression test. Although a lot of surgeons don't like to do dexamethasone suppression, it's a little bit more complex. You know, you give the patient 1 milligram of dex at night, and then the next morning you measure the cortisol. Another way to do it is to do 24-hour urinary cortisol, which is not as good, or 11 p.m. salivary cortisol would be another one to use. So you can rule out patient for Cushing's. Within Cushing's, there's a lot of discussion about subclinical Cushing's versus overt Cushing's, and that's related to, if you give dexamethasone suppression test, how much do you suppress or not suppress a patient? Normally, you should suppress to less than 1.6, 1.7. If that's the case, you don't have Cushing's. A definite diagnosis would be you don't suppress it to any lower than 5, and that's a definite diagnosis. Everything in between is a potential subclinical Cushing's. And then aldosteronoma patients almost always have hypertension. So if you have a patient that don't have hypertension, and they usually don't have primary aldosterone of them, they still could have Cushing's, and they still could have pheos, because those can give you intermittent type blood pressure problem, but aldosterone will be very unlikely to be hypertensive, to be non-hypertensive if you have hyperaldosteronism. So, and that the easiest test to do is to do a plasma aldosterone level with a renin activity and take a ratio out of it. So that's the way I will work these up. Now, the other thing, the other side of the thing that we talked about is whether or not the patient may have cancer. And there are only two types of cancer to the adrenal. Primary cancer from the adrenal or metastatic disease to the adrenal. Metastatic disease to the adrenal is actually very, very common. In fact, more than one third of the people that die from metastatic disease, you can find adrenal metastasis. However, solitary metastasis to the adrenal gland is much less common. But the interesting thing is that if you have a solitary tumor to the adrenal, you can metastasis to the adrenal, you can actually resect it and resect it potentially for cure. Not that different than resecting a colon cancer metastasis to your liver. If you can remove it, sometimes patient can live a long, long time without any problem. Now, this was actually found by our own Dr. Clark at the VA hospital in the 1970s. What you need to do is ask questions to the patient about whether or not they have past medical history of especially melanoma, renal cell cancer, and lung cancer. Those are probably the most common cancers that go to the adrenal. And again, if you find that the patient have such history and they have a solitary adrenal lesion, especially that sort of high density, then that's a very high likelihood that's metastatic disease. And the other side is also true. If the patient has no history of cancer and has no current workup that shows anything like a cancer, it is almost unheard of to have a metastatic adrenal cancer that come from some kind of occult cancer that you haven't seen. So to rule out metastatic disease, just do a good exam on the patient, look at the skin, ask about their colonoscopy, whether they smoke, you know, all of the regular stuff. And if they don't have those things, it's not a metastatic disease. And then the last one is adrenal cortical cancer, which is quite rare. So in a city like San Francisco, the incident will be about one a year. And about two-thirds of these adrenal cortical cancer would be secreting hormone anyway. So you would have picked it up by doing your root out Cushing's and Aldo's and all that. They have a tendency to mix secrete different types of hormones. So if you are worrying about a non-secreting, non-functioning tumor that still could be adrenal cortical cancer, the best way to do is look at the size of the lesion and look at the way it looks on CT and on MRI. Cancers tend to be much higher density, low washout, heterogeneous, look like invasive. Almost always, if something look bad like a cancer, then you should worry about it, especially if it's big. Something that are very homogeneous, you know, you still worry about it, but you worry about it a little bit less. But if they're big enough, and usually, in general, people say if it's larger than 6 centimeters, you have about a 25% chance of it being a cancer, so that would be the indication to remove it. Smaller than 4 centimeters, in general, less than 2% chance of being a cancer. Most of the time, the default is not to remove it. However, it obviously depends on age. A young person with even a 3 to 4 centimeter lesion probably ought to have it removed. An older person, maybe even with a 5 centimeter lesion, and the person has a lot of medical problems and all that, you may want to leave it alone and just follow. So that's the way I would think about it. Again, think in terms of, is it making hormone, and is it a cancer? Okay.
Great, thank you. There seems to be a lot of controversy in the literature regarding the use of adrenal vein sampling when working up an aldosterone-secreting tumor. Can you speak to what its uses are and when it's indicated?
Okay, so the background for the discussion about adrenal vein sampling for hyperaldosteronism is that basically think of it as this: about half of the patient with hyperaldosteronism causing hypertension would have unilateral disease, and the other half will have bilateral disease. The unilateral disease are mostly adenomas, almost always adenomas. There are some rare situations of unilateral hyperplasia. But the adenomas can be quite small. And in addition, you couple with this the potential for incidental loma we just talked about, that the thinking is that relying on CT scan alone, you may miss small aldosteronomas and therefore not give somebody an operation that may be helpful for them, or give somebody an operation for an incidental loma that's actually not an aldosteronoma, and then give patient a failed operation. And so that's the rationale in thinking that we should do venous sampling on these patients. And I come back to it a little bit with the indications. But the way the venous sampling works is that you put a catheter up to the right and the left adrenal vein, and then you catheterize the vein and you drain the blood and you measure aldosterone and you measure cortisol. The reason you measure both is that you use the cortisol to correct for how close you are to the source of the secretion, meaning that even in a normal adrenal, if I get closer and closer to it with my catheter because of the dilution effect, as I get closer to the adrenal gland, my aldosterone level will go up. But proportionally speaking, my cortisol level ought to go up also for the normal adrenal. So you take a ratio, you use the cortisol to correct for your aldosterone level. So usually what you want to see is a significant increase from one side versus the other side, let's say the right side versus the left side, of the aldo-cortisol ratio. Aldosterone serves another, cortisol serves another purpose, is to double check whether your radiologists have been successful. So what I mean by this is that if you just look at the x-ray, the interventional radiologist may tell you, oh yeah, of course, I was inside the right adrenal vein. But if they're inside the right adrenal vein, the level of that cortisol from that vein should be several times higher than the peripheral level. So if the level is the same as peripheral, then you don't trust that study. So if you do venous sampling, the first thing you look for is the right adrenal cortisol. Is it elevated compared with the peripheral? If it's not, you throw that whole set of number away. If it is, then you take the aldo cortisol ratio for that side, and then on the other side. And usually, if you have a unilateral finding, that side, you know, the right or left side will be much higher than the other side, and almost always way higher than the background. And the contralateral side could actually be even be lower than the background, okay? Versus hyperplasia, where both sides will be elevated. And so that's the rationale for adrenal vein sampling. The problem with adrenal vein sampling is that the failure to cannulate the right side is actually much more common than what you read in the literature. The literature tells you that, you know, you are 98% successful in cannulating the vein, but in practice, even a place like UCSF, for a long time, we only have about 80% success in cannulating the right adrenal vein. And if we concentrate the procedure to one person, we can get to about 90% success rate in cannulating the vein. In addition, the adrenal vein sampling can perforate the vein in about 1% of the time and cause complications. And then in addition, even though we think venous sampling should be the gold standard, even when you have a properly cannulated, properly interpreted venous sampling data, about 1% of the time it still predicts the wrong thing, meaning that it tells you that one side is secreting more than the other side, that you actually have bilateral hypersecretion, etc. So it has its own problem. Now, let's go back to the CT scan. So in the literature, there's a lot of discussion about you cannot trust a CT scan, therefore everybody should get venous sampling. But I think the way to look at it is some CT scan can be trusted. So if you start out with a 50-50 chance of a unilateral disease versus bilateral disease, if the CT scan show a clear-cut adenoma, clear-cut adenoma means a 1 centimeter or larger tumor, almost always with Hunt cell unit of less than 10, and a clear-cut normal contralateral adrenal. In that type of situation, about 95% of the time, not 100%, but about 95% of the time, there will be a secreting adenoma on the side of the tumor rather than on the other side, and you will have a successful operation if you were to just remove that. And this is especially true for younger patients. Remember, we talk about the incidental loma rate being only about 1% in 30-year-olds, being 77% in 70-year-olds. So if I see a simple 1 to 2 centimeter lesion in a 35-year-old with aldosteronoma, with hyperaldosteronism and complete normal contralateral site, I would have no problem to just go ahead and take that lesion out. And that's actually the current endocrine society recommendation. They actually have pulled back a little bit from the previous recommendation that everybody needs venous sampling. And as you get older and older, the risk of having a non-functioning, incidentally discovered non-functioning tumor to confuse your hyperaldosteronism, that you get a higher risk that your operation may not be successful because you've just taken out the side that has a non-functioning incidental loma. So at UCSF, we do venous sampling in about half of our patients. So one half of our patients get referred to us with very clear-cut, one-sided lesion, nice adenoma, completely normal contralateral site. We feel very comfortable just to take those patients to the OR. The other group of patients either have much smaller tumors, bilateral tumors, or no tumor at all by CT scan. We send those patients for venous sampling. And the venous sampling shows one side having significantly higher secretion than the other side, then that patient would also be a surgical candidate. So I think the way to think about adrenal vein sampling is this. Don't think about it as a all or none. Don't think about it as you have to do it, or you should never do it, or you should always do it. But say, under what circumstances would be a good way to use it, and under what circumstances maybe you don't need to do it. So do it selectively, I think, will be the right answer to that.
Great. Next question. Is there any role for FNAs or biopsies in this patient population?
So absolutely not. Do not ever, ever, ever stick a needle in the adrenal. There may be situations where you can construe that a needle biopsy may be useful, but it's very, very hard to find. So, for example, the largest sort of airing dirty laundry series from the Mayo Clinic, in 10 years, they had 20 adrenal biopsies. Of the 20 adrenal tumor biopsies, 14 patients had complications, and 6 patients didn't even have the right diagnosis. Okay, so here's the reason why. First of all, if it's a pheochromocytoma, you may have just killed your patient by sticking a needle in there and have it bleed and have a field crisis. If it's adrenocortical cancer that is not so clear on your CT scan, chances are all you will see is adrenal tissue. They won't be able to tell adrenocortical cancers from adenoma just on a needle biopsy, sort of like thyroid biopsy. And if it's a metastatic disease, you may want to remove it anyway if that's a solitary lesion. And then more importantly, there are many adrenal lesions where the needle biopsy come back normal adrenal cortex. You know it looks completely abnormal, but it comes back normal adrenal cortex. So the bottom line is, do not do that. Now, even after saying this, and even at UCSF, this happens at least once or twice a year. And the reason is this. Imagine yourself as a busy surgeon. We don't have to imagine. You are a busy surgeon. You send a patient to the CT scanner for some, you're worrying about something in the liver or something like that for clinical reason. And you're in the middle of your operation and your radiologist call you up, say, "Hey, Dr. Du, you know, you sent me this patient and the liver is fine, but you know, guess what I found in the left adrenal? It's got a 3-centimeter lesion in it. Let me stick a needle in there and tell you what it is. Shall I go ahead and do it?" Okay. Now, you could just say, "Oh yeah, fine, go ahead and do whatever you want." No, the answer is absolutely not. So, a nodule in the thyroid, the default is to stick a needle in there. You may not have to, but the default way to make a diagnosis is to stick a needle in there. The default for any adrenal tumor is do not ever stick a needle in there. Now, you're going to read some literature about how many times people sticking needle in these things and what they do. They're absolutely either not necessary, not helpful, misleading, or dangerous. Did I make that really clear?
Yeah. This has been a great conversation. Thank you again, Dr. Du. Do you have any final parting words before our conference tomorrow?
No, I think that's it. You know, again, keep in mind that adrenal tumors are actually very, very common. 4% of CT scans will show up with some kind of adrenal tumor. So you need to have a very organized way of thinking about adrenal tumors and so that you don't miss things or do the wrong thing. Thank you.
Thank you again. All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow in conference.